Support for this program comes from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.
It was embarrassing. I thought that was embarrassing.
And the dogs are tied to people who are on skis.
It's graffiti, I guess, but with knit fabric.
It's easy to understand it in your head. It's a different thing to try to bring it to your dinner table and explain it to your family and go, this is something I'm really keen on.
From the studios of KUOM Radio K, this is Culture Cube, the arts show that rocks. Tickets are free and there's no wait, so take a seat and hold on to your radio.
Good evening, Culture Cube fans. There is no holiday that inspires quite the spectrum of human emotion as Valentine's Day. And whether you're single and absolutely despise the holiday, or you are in a relationship and planning that perfect romantic night out, here at Culture Q, we've got a great show's worth of stories to give to each and every one of you. What kind of stories? Well, you don't have to wait till Valentine's Day to find out. If there are two things that Minneapolis is known for, it's bikes and bars. We've got a report from our Alley Cat enthusiast on the annual fusion of these two that culminates in the Stupor Bowl. A soldier and a student, members of the ROTC here on campus, are both. And one of our newest reporters brings us the stories from three cadets here at the University of Minnesota.
How my life was going, my parents got divorced, I hit a tipping point and decided to finally do what I wanted to. And I enlisted.
Finally, few of us would ever admit that our parents are cool, but somewhere out there, cool parents do exist. And we've got a story for you on what it means to live both a hip life and to bring life into this world. So, stick around, because it's time for Culture Q. Many of us leave our bikes in the garage during the winter. But for the past 15 years, a determined pack of cyclists has gathered for a giant race known as the Stupor Bowl. Senior producer Zach McCormick gives us a report of this year's action.
The Twin Cities is home to a plethora of safe, family-friendly bike races. And then there's Stupor Bowl. Now you know what 350 bikers sound like when the checkered flag is waved at the Stupor Bowl, the world's largest messenger-style or alley cat bike race held right here in our own backyard during the depths of the Minnesota winter. Founded in the late 90s by a seriously hardcore group of bicycle couriers, it has grown exponentially larger since those early days. The race now attracts major sponsorships and riders from around the country to come battle it out for supremacy on our icy streets.
It's not like a pub crawl. You're gonna have people barging through the door, screaming at you to pour them a shot of whiskey as fast as you possibly can, or like stealing other people's drinks and paying for them, and like it gets pretty competitive.
Christopher Graham would know. He was the champion of Stupor Bowl 2011's Stupor Division. The Stupor race is the one where you have to take a shot at every stop. There were more than 10 stops last year.
Last year, you got three separate manifests, and so you really had to like route it on the fly, which when combined with the drinking aspect of the race can get a little tricky.
As a member of the Minnesota Bike Messengers Association, Chris was elected by his colleagues to organize Stupor Bowl 2012 before the 2011 race, so naturally he had to try and win it all that year. Unfortunately, organizing the race meant that he couldn't compete this year, but Andy Lambert certainly could.
You know, with all alley cat races, you get a manifest, which is basically your list of stops that you have to go to. And at each stop, you go in and you get a stamp. That means you can move on. It's basically like getting a passport stamp.
Andy's a career biker, having delivered through several winters for Peace Coffee. He's now a sales manager at Civia Cycles, a subsidiary of Quality Bicycle Products. This was his third Stupor Bowl. He caught the itch a few years ago.
Yeah, the first one was 2007, so I guess that would have been Stupor Bowl 10. And I didn't really know what it was about. I just went out with a friend, and we decided to do it and didn't have a strategy or anything. We were just out there to have fun. I got the sense that this was a pretty big deal. Like, you know, there were people coming in from other parts of the country, messengers from, like, New York and Chicago and San Francisco. And so I was like, wow, this is kind of a big deal.
Andy's carefully planned route and hard riding helped him take home first place in this year's speed division. The racers in the speed category get to skip the alcohol intake in exchange for having to ride to several more stops and even greater distances.
And so basically my strategy is I get my manifest, then I take a look at a map of Minneapolis, and I make little dots where all the stops are. And then I basically just try to make a big circle. You know, you don't want to do any zigzags or anything like that, but just try to find the most efficient route to hit all of them. And then when you find out where your end spot is, you pick the location that is closest to that end spot, and you make that your second to the last stop, so that you're doing your big loop, and the last stamp you get is the closest spot to your final destination.
He makes it sound easy, but the man is a serious athlete. According to Chris Graham, the drunks had to do the equivalent of a bike ride to Stillwater.
I believe that the Stupor race was around 24 miles this year, which should have put the speed race in at probably about 30.
Now, factor in the cold to your mental image of this ride from hell, and then add a downright mean twist that Chris dreamed up.
So yeah, you finished the race, and then you got a tiny little piece of paper saying you have to go back to these two places. And so for the speed race, it was a little bit longer. You know, you had to go like pretty far back into Northeast to Behind Bars. So yeah, that was a bit of a haul to go all the way from the West Bank all the way back over to Northeast Minneapolis and then come back.
And just in case that didn't sound masochistic enough, here's how the race started.
This year we went to like a service road on the, I guess on the East Bank side of the Stone Arch Bridge, down this big hill and underneath the 35W bridge, so that riders had to run to their bikes and then immediately climb a super steep, windy hill. So you're already just out of breath and your legs are sore and you've gone, you know, a quarter of a mile and you have, you know, 30 more staring at you.
And then I think the point at which I knew I had a really good chance of placing in the top three was maybe after sunrise. It was a long sprint to the hub, and I was going down Hiawatha. I knew I had to get over Hiawatha and try to avoid a stoplight, so I just looked over my shoulder, saw a break in the traffic, and just pulled off into what would have been, you know, oncoming traffic. There weren't any cars or anything, so it was safe. And jumped the median, got over, and it was just like a split-second decision that I knew was going to save me time, and I just, at that point, I felt really good. I felt pretty confident.
That move allowed Andy to take the lead, and he pulled into the finish line at the Nomad Pub just seconds in front of his opponent to take his place at the top of the podium. The Stupor division ended in a crash, naturally. Way more exciting than football, isn't it? Another year, another pack of crazy, dedicated bikers, and another Stupor Bowl in the bag. For Culture Q, I'm Zach McCormick.
Two weeks ago, reporter Emma Nelson asked people around campus what they think when they see students wearing military uniform. The responses were positive, but it made her wonder, what is life like for those wearing the uniform? She talked to three ROTC cadets to find out more.
The Reserve Officer Training Corps, or ROTC, is located in the Armory on the U of M's East Bank. It's a large golden brick building, almost like a castle. An American flag flies from the highest turret, and inside, uniformed students practice marching drills in the gym.
We give students the opportunity to lead each other, both in what we call a garrison, which is normal day-to-day stuff, and we put them in stressful situations.
That's Cole Herring, one of the cadets I was able to speak with.
Combat scenarios where you have an op four, which is an enemy, and you receive a mission, and you're on a strict timeline to come up with a plan. And during the mission, sometimes they'll notionally kill members of the squad.
Cole joined ROTC after already having been deployed. He enlisted in the military right after high school.
I joined the military originally because I'll back up a little bit. Don't take this the wrong way, but basically I loved America and I wanted to represent what America stood for, which is freedom.
Have people taken it the wrong way, or what's the response you've gotten to that?
Most people don't ask me why I joined originally, but when I say I love America, I don't want to come off like I'm being arrogant or just being a big patriot.
I love my country, and I love, you know, the military, and I wanted to, you know, I don't feel like anything is free.
That's Sapuo Roberts, who, like Swenson, joined the military after high school.
Like that whole thing of me developing as a person and as a man and where I wanted to go and how I wanted to be, and also the extra benefits that they had provided, and, you know, decided that was the route that I wanted to go to develop myself.
Both Roberts and Swenson ended up being deployed. Roberts almost immediately after joining, and Swenson a little later. Again, Sapuo Roberts.
I went to Iraq. I was 18 years old. I was stationed in Baghdad.
When I first deployed, I was 22.
Again, that was Cole Swenson.
I was excited because the whole reason I joined was to do my part.
This is the reason that all the cadets I spoke with gave for wanting to deploy, including Sean Tisdell. Tisdell is also the only one of the three to have joined the military after college.
I was in an economics degree here at St. Paul campus at the University of Minnesota, and it just, the prospects and how my life was going, my parents got divorced, it just, finally I hit a tipping point, and I was decided to finally do what I wanted to, and I enlisted, became an air traffic controller.
2 weeks before he would have deployed to Afghanistan, Tisdell was admitted into an ROTC program called Green and Gold, which now pays for his graduate school.
It's been 1 year since they left, so they'll be coming back within a couple of weeks. And so I'm sure I'll see him at some point. I do talk to him still, though. They've called me a few times. It's not really easy for me to call them, but I could also talk to them on Facebook, you know, little things, emails.
The camaraderie amongst the members of the unit they trained with is something that all three men could attest to. Here's Cole Swenson.
Well, you definitely get to know everybody extremely well. For me personally, we developed a strong bond within our team.
It is this very bond, though, that can make it difficult to return to civilian life.
And so initially to come on campus, it was kind of tough because there's really, you know, nobody that I really could relate to, because you understand that me as a soldier, I went through a kind of a different type of maturation process than a normal student would. A normal student, you go through high school, then you go to college, and then you go to the workforce, whereas I went straight from high school straight to workforce, not just any workforce. I went into the United States Army.
And it's not just other students who don't understand. Tisdell's wife is a civilian, and he says it can be hard to explain why his job has to come before everything else.
I try to explain it, but when I tell her I have to do something, she's like, well, you don't, you know, she doesn't understand that I have to do it.
If the Army says, hey, we need you, then I'm going to go and be there. You know, as a military, we go off what the government decides, and if the government decides that we need to go somewhere, we go there and we do our job the best we can. And